You know, those are actual wishes written by kids in our church, which is just crazy. So cute, so sweet. To the kid that said, "I want chapstick," I'm just blown away. I'm serious. I mean, is that not one of those things in life that when you need chapstick, you need chapstick? Oh my goodness, it's like a toothpick, you know? You're like, nothing else will do. I need a toothpick right now. Hey, we're so glad you're here, no matter where you are. We're a network of churches. We've got churches all over the Atlanta area, a couple different churches in different parts of America, which is great. And then we've even got some churches on in other parts of the world. And we're so glad you're here. My name's Clay. I'm one of the pastors on our team. And I started going to church here before I even started working here. I moved to Atlanta in 1998. I was a freshman at Georgia Tech, wide-eyed, so excited about life, and started going to North Point, and it has been a life-changing thing for me. So it's so much fun for me to get to be with you. Thank you so much for being here. No matter where you are, we're so glad that you're here. And this series is really all about being here. It's all about these wishes that we have. All of us have wishes. Wishes are so interesting to me because it tells you a lot about a person based on what they wish. And all of us, no matter who we are, no matter young, old, rich, poor, no matter where we come from, no matter if you're a Christian, if you don't consider yourself a Christian, if you're still on the fence or you feel far away from the fence and you're thinking about what does faith look like for you, all of us have wishes, no matter who we are. That all of us have not just wishes, but we all have a wish you were here, right? Maybe it's a target weight. Maybe it's a target amount of money in the bank. Maybe it's a relational status or a nature or type of relationship. Maybe it's some area of your life that we would all say, man, I am not there yet. I'm better than I was. I've come a long way, but I still wish that I was here. All of us have one of these. And that's what this series is about. The series is a very simple idea. It's just, what does it look like for us to get from wish to here? What does it look like for any of us, no matter where you are, no matter how far away you are from where you wish you were? What does it look like for all of us to start moving in the direction of the wish that we have? And we started this series with a question that I think is quite provocative. It's not provocative because of the nature of it necessarily. It's provocative because if you answer it, you do not know necessarily what answer you're going to get. But we started with this question right here. What does God want for me? What does he wish for me? Not in a big general sense, but specifically. As an employee or as a leader or as a son or a daughter or a dad or a friend or a neighbor, no matter where you are, what is it? What if you would ask that question? What does God wish for me? And what we said is that the answer may shock you. Because too often we get real consumed with all the things that have gone wrong in our past. And we think, oh boy, God may be upset, he may be frustrated, he may be angry. And we identified that all of us might find ourselves in this boat, that you see the problems of your past, but God doesn't. He describes himself in the Bible, specifically in the New Testament, as a perfect father. What would a perfect father wish for his kids? A perfect father is not worried about the problems of the past. No, God is, he's excited, he's interested in, he's wishful about the potential of your future. That's a much, much bigger deal to God than whatever has or hasn't happened in the past. Last week, we said that, well, a big step towards getting there is figuring out who we are. I can't get to where God wishes that I would be until I understand who God thinks I am. That there's oftentimes a gap between how I see myself and how God sees me. And when there's a gap there, the problem is not God's problem. It's my problem. So we said this, that when you see as God sees, when you see you as God sees you, then you can begin to believe what he says about you. If you go to our website, you can catch up on any of these messages. Next week, do not miss it. Bring a friend. Be a perfect time to do that. Andy's going to be back, and he's going to talk about not just how we see ourselves, but who we put around ourselves. That's equally important to getting to where it is that we wish we were. Now, when it comes to wishes for today, I've noticed that there's a couple different kinds of wishes. There are wishes that are out of our control. There are wishes like, oh, I wish I had more money, or I wish I was better looking, or I wish I had more hair, or I wish I had that house, or that job, or that promotion. And sometimes they seem like they're out of our control. And then there are also wishes that are under our control. There are wishes that, well, I'm just a couple decisions away from getting to where I wish that I was. I've noticed in life, the people that I look up to most, when I really think about where they are in life, I realize that I'm only a few decisions away from getting to where they are. The difference between me and the people that I look up to are just the decisions that they've made with the discipline that they have. So maybe where you wish you were is not all that far away. And that's why we're spending the summer talking about this. No better time of the year. When everything slows down, gives you a moment to step back and think about what would it look like for me to begin to move towards the wishes that are under my control. But today I want to talk about not just the out of our control or the under our control, but how you can enjoy the ones that are out of your control. If you ever were to get it. If it ever happened to you, I hope that you can enjoy it. And I hope that the ones that are under our control, we can start moving towards them. And too often, the reason why we don't is because we can't control ourselves. Isn't that just so true? When you look back on the regrets of the past, we realize, oh, wow, the problem was that I just couldn't help myself. I couldn't control myself. That's why I spent so much, ate so much, spent too much time on it, said too much, got too mad. I could not control me. When you think about this for your life, I don't know where this intersects with you, but where is it where you would just say, I just can't control myself? Oftentimes, they're great stories. I mean, we love to tell stories about weekends where our friends were out of control, right? I mean, most Hollywood movies are about people who were out of control, not people who were totally under control. People that could not control themselves. That's what makes a good movie, because you think, holy cow, this is like a traffic accident that I can't stop watching, right? I mean, I remember for me when I was a kid, I remember my always that vivid picture of your Halloween candy spread all over the floor. And I remember thinking, I can't wait to be an adult to where I can just eat all of this. I don't want any restraint. I just want to be able to go through all of this. And I realized that my parents, that they would limit me on the amount of candy I would have. And then meanwhile, they would take the bag somewhere else and they would eat whatever it was that they wanted and tell me that it's because some of the candy was poisoned. Come on. The worst was when that rumor started going around that people were putting razors in candy. Did your parents not tell you about that? Mine did. And so now I've used the same rumor on my own kids. I'm like Reese's Cups. I'm going to need them all. Supposedly, somebody's lacing Reese's Cups with razors. I know it's awful, but I'm going to have to confiscate all of those. I don't know where it is in your life that you feel like you just can't control yourself, but chances are really good that what stands between where you are and where you wish you were is your ability to control you. Chances are what stands between you and enjoying that wish when it gets here is your ability or your inability to control you. How you doing? You got you under control? The topic of this is really just self-control. Now, this isn't what all of us woke up today wanting to talk about. I hope we talk about self-control today. That'd be a blast. But we would all say, yeah, that's pretty important and pretty powerful. A king from thousands of years ago gives us this picture of what it looks like for someone to be out of control, for someone to be unable to control himself or herself. His name was Solomon. He wrote this in the book of Proverbs. He said that like a city whose walls are broken through is a person who lacks self-control. Just like a city whose walls are torn down is like a person who has no ability to control himself or herself. In that day, the wall around the city was their protection. And if there was no wall, if the city had no protection, what would people do? They were vulnerable. They would just get ransacked. They would get robbed from. There was no ability to have any commerce or any agriculture because they had no wall. They had no protection. And he says, and the same is true in your life, in my life, that when I don't have self-control, I'm extremely vulnerable. When you don't have self-control, you're extremely vulnerable. Any temptation can come in and take whatever it wants, whenever it wants. Do you have anyone in your family who's an alcoholic? Isn't that true of them? In an attempt to just be free and enjoy themselves, now this lack of self-control, their inability to tell themselves no, is coming in and grabbing whatever it wants from their future. What an amazingly powerful image that Solomon gives us. So today's about us figuring out how to build the wall up around us. Solomon says that anyone without control in their life is like someone without a wall. He gives us a picture, and that's the beauty of the Old Testament. The Old Testament is so good at painting a picture of what it looks like. And then he just moved on to another topic, did not tell us one thing we could do to get there. He's just like, wow, wouldn't that be great if you had a wall around your city? Anyway, on to the next topic. Everybody's sitting here going, hey, Solomon, can you back up to where you explain how to get there? And he's like, I don't have time for that. I got to move on to something else. Good news. The Old Testament gives us a picture of the puzzle. The New Testament gives us a game plan on how to put the puzzle together. The Old Testament says, hey, here's what the puzzle looks like when it's finished. The New Testament says, turn all the pieces over, get all the edges out, put them together, take all the ones on the inside and sort them by color, and you start to put your puzzle together. Gives us a game plan on how we can build the wall in our life. Here's what the Apostle Paul said when he wrote this letter called 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 10. He tells this group of people in Corinth, he says, let me tell you how you can begin to have self-control in your life, how you can begin to build the wall back up in your life so that you can have the kind of life that you actually desire. He says, this is how you do it. He says, for though we live in the world, he backs way up. He's like, we're living in the world? Any aliens out there? None of you? Cool. All right, we're living in the world. Got it, Paul. You can go a little faster than that. Okay, for though we live in the world, he says, we do not wage war as the world does. Do you realize that life is a battle? Life is a war. There's a battle going on for your current and for your future. We don't talk about this a lot, but Jesus said that there is this not just a physical battle, there's an actual spiritual battle going on for you and for your future. Jesus said it this way. He said the enemy, listen to the military terms. He said the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I have come to give you life. He says there's a battle going on. There's a war going on for your life. It's not the kind of war that we would think, though. There is an evil one. There is an enemy. His name is Satan, and he wants to destroy things in your life, but he's not going to do it the way that you think he's going to do it. It's not a battle that's out in front of us. It doesn't happen at the behavior, at the action. If you wait until the action or until the behavior, you've waited too late. Paul says, there's a war going on. It's different than you think. You got to back up. He says, you got to back up all the way to your mind because the battle for self-control begins in the brain. The battle for self-control in your life, it does not begin when that temptation comes and you have to make that decision. Am I going to have self-control or am I not? When that moment comes, that opportunity to work out or to save or to eat the way you want to eat, the battle doesn't begin at that moment. He says, no, 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 it's different than you would think. The war that's waging actually begins in the mind. It begins in your thoughts. He says, so let's talk about that for a second. Let's talk about the battle that's going on in your mind. And so he continues and he says, the weapons that we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, he says they're not the weapons of the world. They're different than that. He says they have divine power to demolish strongholds. You know what a stronghold is? A stronghold is a mindset that holds you hostage. It's a mindset or a habit or an addiction that keeps you from getting to where you wish you were. It stands between you and your wish. So there's a wall that's been torn down of self-control. Now all of a sudden you're just saying yes to anything and everything. Next thing you know, something has crept into your life and built a stronghold. And he says, you don't deal loosely with strongholds. Look at the word he uses. He says, you demolish strongholds. You don't take over the stronghold, change the locks, and then continue to live in it. No, you just tear it down. You tear it down to the floor, and you just start over again. And he says that there's a divine power that's available to you and to I to demolish these strongholds, which is good news to me. Because I have some strongholds in my life that I have tried and tried and tried and tried and tried and tried and tried to demolish on my own. What about you? Do you have any strongholds in your life that you've tried to deal with? How's it going? Sometimes you do well, right? I mean, there is such thing called willpower, self-discipline. Maybe some of your personalities are more disciplined than others, and maybe you would say, well, I can manage it pretty well. Others of you, though, would say, yeah, this stronghold is whooping my tail. He says there's actually a divine power available. It's divine. It's from God, and it's a power. It's the same word we get the word dynamite from, dunamis. There is a divine dunamis available to demolish this stronghold. It's as if God looks in his bag of weapons and says, oh, I got one for you. You know, the Ninja Turtles have been so popular for so long. How about that for a transition? I mean, think about it. When I was a kid, the Ninja Turtles were the thing. And they still are to any 5-year-old boy. And how does a 5-year-old kid choose which Ninja Turtle they're going to be a fan of? It's based on the weapon, right? You got Raphael. I believe he's got that little trident. He's got two of them. They look kind of like the Little Mermaid's dad, that little thing that he carries around, that fork. He's got two of them. It's awesome. Then you've got one of them. I think it's Donatello. He's got this staff, which... what a terrible weapon that is. Complete shaft he got, pun intended. So he just fights with that. It's not very great, right? Then you've got one of them who's got a sword. That's the most lethal. It's probably the best, but it's not the most fun. Which one's the best? The nunchucks. Come on. Are you kidding me? As a kid, man, those nunchucks, I was like, let me take care of someone with some nunchucks. Like, there's just something fun about waving those things around. You have no idea what you're doing or how to even handle a nunchuck. If you've got nunchuck skills, you probably have problems. Who knows how to use a nunchuck? But they're awesome. But it's as if God looks through his weapons and goes, stronghold. What am I going to give you to defeat a strong... I got it. What about... a divine dunamis. What about divine power? Would you like that? Yeah, that sounds great. He says, these weapons that we use, that we have at our disposal, this weapon is different. He says, it's not like the weapons that other people use. What are the weapons that Satan uses to build strongholds in our life? We talked about one last week. We said it's insecurity. That's a weapon that he uses. Doubt is a weapon that he uses. Shame is a weapon that he uses. Guilt is a weapon that he uses. He says, they're not like those weapons. He says, now, if you went to a counselor and said, hey, I need some weapons to fight this stronghold in my life, he or she would tell you some things to do, which I think that Paul's saying, those are great. And it's a little bit different than that. It's yes and. It's yes, that's a great one, but also I want to give you this divine power to defeat this stronghold. Do you remember when David, in the story of David and Goliath, he's just a teenager. He's fighting Goliath. Before the battle actually begins, David looks at Goliath and he says, "You come against me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, weapons that I do not have, I do not use. I come against you with a different weapon. I come against you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. And I'm going to cut your head off and serve it to you on a platter." David says, "I've got a different kind of weapon." In psychology, just in college level psychology, and when I say college level, I mean my freshman psychology class that I did not pay much attention in. In that kind of psychological world, there's a real simple way to think about this, right? It's called classical conditioning. Pavlov, he was one of the ones who came up with this idea, right? He wanted to change the habits of the dog. The dog would get hungry and start to salivate, and then he'd give the dog food. He said, "How can I change this?" And so what did he do? He started doing food and a bell, and then all of a sudden it changed. He started doing the salivation and a bell, and he started changing the way the dog responded. He conditioned the dog to the bell. That's the way we operate, right? Stephen Covey wrote about this in Seven Habits. There's a guy named Charles Duhigg who's written about this in Power of the Habit. This is just a simple way to think about it. There's a thought, right? And then there's just a what? A response. We just respond. Some kind of stimulus, some kind of trigger, and then we just respond. But we're not like dogs, right? We're not like dogs who just see a squirrel and give chase. I mean, some of you who have like massive ADD problems, you are, and I am too. But he says that Paul's saying there's something better than that. He says, there's the thought, and then there's the response, but there's some space between, as Dave Matthews said. There's the space between the thought and the response, and I want to talk about that. You actually have the ability, the power, to do something different in that space. So let me tell you how to do that. Next verse, he says. We demolish, same word. We don't deal with it lightly. We don't deal with it loosely. We don't flirt with it. He says, we demolish. Listen to the aggressive nature of that language. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. These arguments. This word is translated as imagination. These what ifs that we allow in our mind. Have you ever allowed any what ifs in your thoughts? Yeah, what if I tried that? I wonder, would anybody know? I wonder, what if I could get away with this? I wonder, what if she never found out? I wonder, what if I could just handle the consequences on my own? We all have allowed these arguments in our mind. He says, we should demolish them, though. We should demolish these arguments and then every pretension. This is an interesting word, an interesting way to translate this. It's just basically a line of argument, a line of reasoning. It's an assertion. These pretensions that we build up, they actually can set themselves up against the knowledge of God. An example of a pretension that I build oftentimes in my own mind that sets itself up against the knowledge of God is that I know better than God, that I'm always right, which I am, but I allow that thought to stay in my mind. That was a joke, okay? I'm not always right. That's part of the problem. But maybe you feel that way. I mean, I feel like 99% of the time I'm right, so I kind of know better. Let me just give you an example of this. Do any of you play fantasy football? Any of you ladies play? Any men play fantasy football? It's a fascinating hobby that has just exploded in America, right? And I was playing last fall, and I don't have a lot of time to do a lot of research and homework. So the draft was coming up, and I needed to do some quick research. And so I found a podcast. I just searched on the podcast app, fantasy football mock draft or something like that. And I found this this podcast. It was like an hour long, and it was Rich Eisen on the NFL Network, and he was hosting this fantasy football mock draft. And so I was mowing the lawn, so I started listening to it, and he started throwing some things out, like that Darren Sproles, he's hoping it's going to have a great year with the New Orleans Saints. And I was like, what in the world? Darren Sproles doesn't play for the New Orleans Saints. He's playing for the Eagles this year. And then he started talking about Greg Jennings and how Greg Jennings and Aaron Rodgers have such good chemistry together for the Packers. And I was like, Greg Jennings, he hasn't played with the Packers for a couple years. He's with the Vikings now. And I started just mowing the lawn in my own mind, building up this pretension, this speculation that Rich Eisen is an idiot. That's what I started thinking. I was like, what is this guy's problem? He doesn't know a thing about football, and he's hosting a podcast about fantasy football. It happened for the third time, and I genuinely just thought, clearly I'm right, and clearly this guy is wrong, until I turned the lawnmower off and looked at my phone and realized that I was listening to a podcast that was 3 years old. And I remember it hitting me, going, oh, I'm the arrogant idiot. I just naturally think I'm right. And maybe you do as well. And we build these pretensions up in our mind that set themselves up against the knowledge of God. What's the knowledge of God? That His way is the best way. Isaiah said, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so my ways are higher than your ways, and my thoughts better than your thoughts. It takes humility to say, God, your way really is the right way. But we think, no, come on. I mean, seriously, God, sex just for marriage? Maybe in the 20s, like 1820. Like, God, come on. That's not for today. God's going, okay, well, I'm just telling you, my way is the best way. We think, come on, God. I mean, secrets, like, this is not that big of a deal. I can handle it. No one's going to find out. It's going to be fine. God's going, no, everything eventually will come to the light, and it will cost you. No, not me. I can handle it. Like, I know better. It's a speculation. It's a pretension that sets itself up. It builds a fortress against the knowledge of God. Paul's saying, you got to destroy that. You can't even give it space or give it room. He says, if there's a thought and then there's a response, there is this space between. And too often what we do is we make a thought comfortable. We take the thought and we just make it comfortable. And then we respond. We treat our thoughts like they're at a fine restaurant and we're the maitre d'. And we say, oh my goodness, I wasn't expecting you. You have a reservation? No, you don't? No problem. We'll move some things around. It's going to be just a few minute wait, but if you don't mind waiting, we'll totally take care of you. It's what we do to our thoughts. It doesn't matter what the thought is. Even if we would go, is that a great thought or is that not a great thought? I'm just going to let it sit up there, not do anything about it. Paul says, yeah, but the battle is actually in the mind. And if you want to have self-control, then you've got to figure out something different to do with those thoughts. You don't make them comfortable. He says, no, here's what you do. He continues and says, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. We don't make it comfortable. We take it captive. We don't give it space. No, we destroy it. We put a gun to its head and say, no, 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 not in here. In between the thought and the response, self-control begins when you begin, when I begin, to take our thoughts captive. That's where the battle of self-control is, where it begins. I'm going to tell you who would make a terrible maitre d'. This guy. Awful. You do not want this guy as a host at your restaurant. You guys seen this movie? Or have you seen Taken 2 or Taken 3? It's all the same. Liam Neeson's daughter gets kidnapped, right? It's an amazing movie. So suspenseful. I mean, you can have your whole seat. You're not going to need it. You're going to be on the edge the whole time. Incredibly suspenseful movie. And Liam Neeson gets this phone call at the beginning of the movie. Do you remember this? Oh, my goodness, this scene. I love it. He says, I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. if you're looking for ransom, I can tell you that I don't have any money. But what I do have, a very, very particular set of skills, skills that I have acquired over a very long career, skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you. That's what Paul says we should do with our thoughts. Why was Liam Neeson so tenacious? Because it was his daughter. And God goes, your thoughts are really powerful. And you're playing way too nice with your thoughts. You're making your thoughts way too comfortable. Your thoughts don't own you. You own your thoughts. And so you don't make them comfortable. No, you take them captive with the same tenacity that somebody would take someone captive who kidnapped their daughter. He says, we take captive every thought. We take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. Why? Because his way is the best way. Your thoughts are going to be obedient to someone. You have far more control over your thoughts than you ever imagined you have. Paul's saying, God has a divine power, a divine dunamis available for you, not to make your thoughts comfortable, but to take them captive. Why? So that you and I can begin to restore the wall of control in our life. That's why you take your thoughts captive. So that you can restore the wall that has been broken down. So let me just ask you a few questions as we wrap this up. What are the thoughts that you need to take captive? You know what they are. They're the same thoughts that have plagued you for years. What are the thoughts that you need to take captive? If you need help, maybe this question would help. What are the thoughts that you need to take captive that result in the behaviors that you're trying to avoid? When you look back over your life, there are some behaviors that have gotten you and I in trouble. Those behaviors were predicated by some thoughts that we gave room to. So what are the thoughts that you and I need to take captive that result in the behaviors that we're trying to avoid that are ultimately keeping you and I from the wishes of our future, the wishes for your future? You know they are. And you have this divine dunamis to take them captive. Now the question is, will you do it? Maybe some of you need to spend some time. Maybe you need to take time to think about what you need to think about. Tony Robbins calls that the hour of power. In Christian circles, we've called that a quiet time. That's what that is. It's saying, I'm going to open up the Bible in the morning and I'm going to take some time to think about what it is that I need to think about because my thoughts are powerful and I don't just have to respond to every thought. No, I'm going to treat my thoughts like Liam Neeson treated every one of those jokers that had captured his daughter. You and I, we've got to choose the thoughts that result in the behaviors that you wish for your future. You have a future in mind. You have a wish for your future. God has a wish for your future. So what thought stands between where you are now and where you wish you were? What thought stands between where you are now and where God wishes you were? You've got to learn. You've got to learn to figure out how to harness the divine dunamis and take that thought captive to the obedience of Jesus, because he knows what's best for your life, for my life. I mean, why was Liam Neeson so aggressive in that movie? No, I mean, no one watches that movie and goes, that guy needs to relax. No, every one of you would have done the same if it were your daughter or your son. You would have said, oh, there ain't anybody too big for me to step up to. Did you know that your thoughts, did you know that there's a thought orbiting around your world that has the potential to harm your kids? There's a thought that's orbiting around your head that has the potential to harm your future? How tenacious should you be with that thought? If you're not going to pay attention to this, the aggressive language alone ought to at least make you go, you know what, maybe I should at least take some time to think about what it is I need to be thinking about. Because thoughts are powerful. And there's a thought potentially in your world that could harm you, your future, those around you, and you have the power to choose whether or not you're going to make it comfortable or whether you're going to put a gun up to its head and say, you're going to have to find another place to go because you can't stay here. I pray for myself and for you, especially all the men that are listening, that you would have the courage to tell every impure thought, you gotta go. You can't stay here. I'm praying for every woman in this room, in the West, any of our churches, watching online, that you would tell every unhealthy thought that's in your mind, you gotta go. You can't stay here. There's too much at stake for me to let you have room in my mind. Because the battle for self-control begins in the brain. And if you don't have a wall that's built around your life, you will not be able to live the kind of life that you want to live. So what's it going to take for you to get a little more aggressive, a little more tenacious with your thoughts that are going to result in a behavior that potentially might rob you of your future and keep you from the wish that you have for you and that God has for you? I'd love to pray for us at this point. Heavenly Father, I am so grateful that you gave us a divine power. You gave us your Holy Spirit to live inside of us. And that's more powerful than any influence on us. So God, I pray for every man. Every man that's entertaining thoughts about a fantasy somewhere that he thinks will fulfill him. God, I pray that you would give him the courage, the strength to tell that thought, you gotta go. For every woman that's thinking about some kind of unhealthy thought God, I pray that you would give her the courage, the strength to say, not anymore. I'm not going to give that thought any more space. And God, I pray that you would allow all of us to move past our regrets and move towards the wishes that you have for our future, because you are a good God who wants great things for us. And it begins when we begin to build the wall of self-control in our life. God, thank you for Jesus. And we pray all of this in his name. Amen.